Welcome to the Friday, August 9th, 2013, Drupalize Me podcast. Drupalize Me. Welcome, Drupalers. This is Addison Berry. I am the host for your podcast today. And with me today, I have a special guest, Alex Pott, who is a co-committer for Drupal 8, and I guess the newest co-committer. There are several now. And the reason I have Alex on, other than he's just a really pleasant guy to talk to, is I want to find out more about what being a core committer is all about and what working on Drupal 8 is like from that perspective. And but also the talking about spending time with, like, how to live your life, how to pay the bills and get things done, but be able to focus the kind of time and energy that's required to really get the work done with Drupal Core, because it's not, you know, a small, simple little side project anymore. So that's what we're going to be kind of diving into in this podcast. Before we get started on that whole train of thought, though, news and events. News for Prague. The session selections have been done. And next Tuesday, August 13th, is the actual schedule is going to come out. So right now you can go and see the accepted sessions listed. But if you want to see the actual, like, what day and start building your schedule, that's coming out next week, along with the core conversations, because that selection has closed and they're going to be publishing which core conversations are happening. So keep your eyes peeled for that with Prague. And, you know, even if you can't go physically to Prague, keep in mind that all the sessions are recorded and they're posted up online pretty quickly after the sessions. So you still probably want to be able to track it, because you'll be able to still kind of see the sessions and take part remotely. And then we have some Drupalize Me news. We are hiring. We've posted two positions. One is for a designer, and the other is for a new trainer. We have a lot of things in the works, especially with Drupal 8 coming. So if you are interested in working for Lullabot, Drupalize Me specifically, that means I would be your boss. Go check out lullabot.com/jobs and let us know, because I would like to talk to you. And then, yeah, we have videos. I've been doing the Using Drupal O'Reilly book series, and so we're getting through kind of the basic site building chapters right now. We just finished chapter 2 this week. Chapter 3, which does sort of fields and views, is going to start out next week. But then after that, in September, we'll be hitting into more complex case studies, where we're doing stuff like media and multilingual and things like that. So that stuff's coming. And then the rest of the team is actually meeting in Philly next week to record stuff like PSD to theme and data migration and some other stuff that's sort of high on our suggestion box list. So you can look forward to that stuff coming out soon-ish. Once we get it recorded, we still have to edit it all down and get it through the pipeline, but it's coming. And then events that we are involved with in some way, at least, there's certainly a lot of events going on, but this weekend, so August, you know, like 10th-ish weekend, is, there's Drupal Camp Connecticut at Yale University and Drupal Corn, Iowa, which is in Iowa City. And, both of those were giving away biannual memberships. So if you are attending, you might be able to get a free membership. And then next week, is Drupalaton in Balaton, Hungary, which is like, it's like this big lake, and there's like beautiful beaches there. It sounds like a lot of fun. I wish I would have been able to go to that one. But we are also giving away a biannual membership there. I think we're giving away like three of them, actually. So if you are thinking about going, you should go check it out. Rub shoulders with your fellow Drupalers out there. And then, of course, DrupalCon Prague is coming up fast. It's like 6 weeks away or something like that, I think, something like that. We have a workshop that we're doing on the training day on the Monday called Mastering Git for the Drupal Developers Workflow. So if you know some Git and you're trying to figure out how to really get it working for you in terms of getting work done on a Drupal site, particularly if you're with a team, that's what the entire day is going to be about. And you come with your project and your team and your current situation, and you walk out with kind of a prototype of a workflow for you to go back to work and actually start using. So sounds pretty cool. We're also going to do that free community tools workshop on the sprint day on Friday. So if you want to contribute, but you aren't quite sure where to get started, the Friday in Prague is going to be perfect. We start off with this free workshop. We get you set up with like a local dev environment, get Drupal 8 installed, make sure it works on your local machine and all that stuff. And then there are mentors available to help you start working on Drupal core issues, like really, even if you're not a programmer. So definitely check that out. Okay, so that's a whole bunch of event stuff. Let's get down to the meat of it here, and let's start talking with Alex. Hi, Alex.
Hi, Eddie. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm very well. Very well. Thank you. Thank you for inviting me to the podcast.
Yeah, no, thanks for coming on. Well, why don't you start by just giving like a quick intro of, well, I don't know, who you are, where you are, those kinds of things.
Okay, sure. So my name, as Eddie said, is Alex Pott. I'm the latest core committer for Drupal 8, one of five. Currently, I'm sitting in my house in London, and basically I'm working full-time on Drupal 8 and committing patches that are being provided by the community. So we'll dive into that process later. So that's who I am and what I'm currently doing. I guess one of the things that everyone's always interested is, you know, they ask you, well, how do you get into Drupal? So my story starts about 6-7 years ago, actually. I was working at a company owned by a university, and they were looking to put some websites online. And at the time, everyone was just putting HTML on a server, FTPing it up. And I was like, this doesn't look very good. We should do this in a better way. And I evaluated a load of CMSs and chose Drupal because it was the best fit for the needs of the projects at the time. So from there, I just continued to work on, and well, use Drupal, and I was a user for about 4 or 5 years, and I had a couple of modules that I posted on D.O, and then I was working for Capgemini, working on really, really big projects, and I was getting involved in the whole process of making projects live, and I was like, this process really sucks. We were using features in Drupal 6 and Drupal 7 and getting in a real tangle. And I was like, I want to make this better. I don't want to have to do this again. And so I was really fortunate to be sponsored by Capgemini to go to the con in Denver. And I was like, okay, this is my time. I'm going to go and sit at the sprint on the table working on the Drupal 8 configuration management initiative and say, I know what we should do.
I have all the answers.
Yeah, I have all the answers because I've had all the problems. And so I walked into the room, sat down on the table which had like CMI written on it. I've kind of worked out that it was being led by Greg Dunlap, Hayrocker, a Lullabotian now. Mm-hmm. So I sat on this table. I looked over at Greg and said, "Hi, I'm Alex. I've got loads of ideas." And Greg looked at me and with that face that he can pull, and only he can pull, like, I don't know you from Adam. but he, you know, fortunately, he just said, oh, well, hey, I've got lots of issues. Do you want to work on them? And I said, yeah, sure. And then I just started working in the issue queue and providing patches. And through Greg's encouragement, you know, some of the things from Royal Mail have ended up in, well, from the Capgemini project that I worked on, have ended up in Drupal core, and some of the things haven't, but it's been a great experience working with on the CMI team. And then through that, I realized that I really, really enjoyed working on Drupal core. And about February this year, a month after my son was born, I was like, hey, you know what? I've spent 2 years working my socks off for Capgemini, having a great time with them, but what I really want to do is spend time with my son and work on Drupal core. And fortunately, Capgemini pay well enough to allow me to kind of take a 6-7 month break from work. So that's
nice.
That's where I am here. Well, how I've got here now.
Right. So was the CMI stuff you did, was that the first time you ever worked on Core?
Nope. Actually, the first person that ever worked with me on a Core patch was another person who worked for Lullabot. It was Karen Stevenson. I was the university that I worked for sponsored me to go to DrupalCon Paris, which was the first DrupalCon I attended. And I was really excited about that. And I went to the 3 days of the conference and I attended lots of sessions. And I was like, wow, this is amazing. There's all these people talking about these incredible things. You know, I got to see Chex talk about the vagaries of PHP. I got to see Mark Bolton talk about design and visual layout. And it was all of us like so inspiring. I was like, I've got to go to the sprint. I've got to get involved in this. It's amazing. And so then, like my involvement in kind of Drupal Core became this thing that I used to do at cons. So I used to go mm-hmm. to the sprint, work on a patch, and maybe you know work the week or the week after it, you know, on that patch and help get it in. So I have like 3 or 4 patches from before Drupal 8, you know, that way where I used to just turn up to a con, work on a sprint, meet some amazing people, but not continue it because. You know, it's hard to find the time, and mm-hmm. contribute to Core takes time.
Yes, it does. Core in particular. So how did you go from just, you know, a couple of patches and then working on CMI to actually becoming a Core committer? I mean, that's a really small select group, and that is quite a different change than just, like, writing some patches at Drupal cons.
Yeah, Well, the thing is when you get involved more in Core, things start happening quite quickly once people see that you're prepared to put the time and effort in. So, you know, as I say, after I met Greg in Denver, and then after Denver, I was like, okay, this is going to be the first time that I come back from a DrupalCon and I don't just work on the patch that I worked on at DrupalCon. I'm going to, you know, follow the issue queue for CMI religiously. I'm going to like comment and review patches, and I'm going to get involved. And you know, as I did that, then people around the CMI initiative started to recognize, hey, Alex has got something to give, and he's taking the work seriously. So Greg encouraged me to come to Dev Days Barcelona. I met Daniel Kudvine's son, and we like really sparked off each other in terms of like, hey, we really need to change the way that this is architected, and we worked through a massive change to CMI from that. And so, you know, it's just a period of like amazing growth that happened after I decided to stay involved in Drupal Core. You meet all these people, they encourage you, you start to spark off them and encourage them, and it's, you know, a whole virtuous cycle of like, wow, there's all this stuff going on. And the thing with CMI for Drupal 8 is because it's how we store the configuration, it really underpins a lot of the subsystems. So I guess from getting involved in CMI, people saw that, hey, this dude doesn't just know about CMI. He's been building big sites for Drupal for the last 2 years. He knows about other stuff too. And so to say how do Core committers get selected? Well, they get selected by Dries based on what they've been doing in the community. So you know, it's obviously partially about what you know, but it's not just really, you know, about like, are you the best the best computer programmer, developer, architect ever? It's also about how you behave in the community. So you know, I think that. I guess people realize that I try and give good, honest reviews. I'm always I'm very happy to admit when I'm wrong. And I like to think that I spend time with people working through things rather than just you know, ignoring issues or going off on one.
Yeah, so. I mean, I would the Core committer position, I think, has a lot less to do with code than it does with what most people would probably say are soft skills, in terms of organizing and communicating and things like that.
I think you could say that on one level that is really important. I mean, obviously, we're really lucky to have people like Angie Webchick and Dries who takes a really big overview. But at the same time, without Nat or Nathaniel Catchpoles or Catch, his kind of like deep understanding of the code, you can't commit the difficult patches. So it is about the code too,
right?
So I guess one of the reasons that I was potentially chosen when Angie was looking to take maternity was the fact that, I have some of the soft skills, but I also, because of the nature and the number of Drupal 8 patches that there were at that time, also have some of the deep level Drupal guts. How does this work? Experience too. But it's difficult because at the moment, you're reviewing a patch, whether you're Dries and you've been with Drupal from the beginning, or you're AlexPot and you've only been working on core for the last year and a half or so, you still have some difficult calls to make on the code, because at the end of the day, that's what's being committed.
So what is the day of a committer like what is it that you do, and like what is that balance between talking to people versus actually working on the code itself?
Day of a committer, so generally it revolves around the RTBC queue and the size of it. At the moment, the RTBC queue is probably around 30 issues, and it hasn't been that way for a long time. Basically, since I've been a committer, it was around 4 or 5 pages of issues. So we're talking about 250 odd issues that had to be the community thought was ready. So I guess we got to start at the beginning of how does the community work? How does change happen to Drupal? There's three types of issues. There's like a bug, a task, and a feature request that result in code. So people create issues on Drupal.org when they find a bug in Drupal 8 and they're like, hey, this is wrong, we've got to fix this. And so they or someone else might work on a patch. It gets reviewed by other people in the community. And when everyone thinks, hey, this is a great fix, someone will mark it RTBC. At least that's how it should work. It doesn't always work that way. Sometimes people RTBC their own patches and all sorts. But at some point, in order for it to get for a code change to happen in Drupal, it ends up on a committer's computer, looking at it and going, "Hey, does this really do everything?" So at that point, you're sitting there with the patch on the Drupal.org. You'll probably apply it to your local checkout. You'll see that you'll review the changes and you'll go, "Does this make sense?" There are a lot of things that kind of come into that judgment. Starting with just what's on Drupal.org, there's the issue summary at the top of the issue. If those are really good, clear, and concise, then that helps a whole lot. At the moment, I would say maybe like 25% of our issues have good issue summaries by the time they get to RTBC. Mm. Most of the times when people are marking things RTBC, it's just because the code looks good. It'd be really great if when people marked things RTBC, they were also reviewing the issue summary. So that's because sometimes, when you get an issue and there's really no summary there and you're just looking at the patch, you're like, well, why is this important?
Right, what's the story here?
What's the story here? We need to be told. So that's, that's how you manage things on kind of the Drupal.org side is, you read the issue summary, you read, if it's really complicated, you might read every comment on the patch to see how we got where we've got. If it's potentially simpler, maybe you'll just read the last 3 or 4 comments just to make sure that there's basic agreement. You'll read the issue summary. You'll read the lines of code. If it's like a 5K patch, that's probably enough. And then you'll review it yourself. So you'll go, from my experience with Drupal, does this make sense? Mm-hmm. And if at that point it does with a 5K patch, that'll be the time when you go, okay, let's pull the trigger. Let's commit this and push it up to Drupal and tell the world. However, and that's the kind of the simplest workflow. What tends to happen on the more complex changes is that there's a lot of back and forth in the issue queue. There'll be discussions, and you'll pick up on this if you're in IRC, Internet Relay Chat. Basically, there's a channel called Hash Drupal Contribute, where everyone who's working on Drupal.org kind of logs in and they talk about issues. And from monitoring the chatter on there, you can get a heads up of some of the big issues that are coming and the way that different people feel about it in the community. Because you know, Drupal is a community and reputation matters. So you know, who writes patches and who RTBC patches, you know, influences, you know, how you feel about things at that point and how you can get involved with the patch at that point. So you know, if I see, for example, you know, it's Chex who's written the patch and it's been RTBC'd by Damien and it's all in the database there. I know that you know this patch is being written by the database maintainers. It's a serious patch that is going to be highly technical, and that if I don't get it like with one go, then I'm really going to have to turn to them to help me to go through the issue, to explain it to me. And then you know that's the great thing about IRC is that you can sit there and you can talk to the contributors and go, hey, help me. And then because of the nature of Drupal, people are really happy to stand up and talk about their patches, and that helps too. So yeah, that's how patches get committed. So the question was, going back to that, like, so what's my day like? So mostly at the moment, my day is basically driven around the RTBC queue, and you know, I look at the oldest issues there. I go, okay, this one's been RTBC for more than 2 days, which means that the community's had a time to respond to that RTBC. I then go, okay, do I need more information? Does it still apply? All this kind of stuff. Is there any quick stuff that I can do, or is it just going to be a quick commit? But you know, if it's a bigger thing, then I'll sit down and review the patch line by line.
Oh dear, that takes a while.
Can do.
So earlier you said you basically took time off. You saved up money. You took time off so that you could spend time with your family and spend time reading patches line by line when required. Yeah. And I guess that's sort of like you had this and you're like, this is what I feel like I want to do with my life. So I'm going to spend my money this way. But yeah, what does that like mean going forward? I mean, I'm assuming that you can't do that forever.
doesn't work. The money tree has unfortunately failed to materialize in my garden, no matter how much I go and weed. So at some point I'm going to be looking for ways of funding myself, which either involve I'm not sure what they involve at the moment. Just this week I signed up to use GitTip, which is an online open source way of tipping developers, and basically it allows people to, you know, to do micro donations to people. So at the moment I'm being paid $7.25 a week to work on Drupal 4.
Not gonna quite cut it.
A couple of cups of coffee. I'm at the moment exploring ways of funding myself. And you know, obviously, I talk to people in the community about this issue. A lot of people are concerned, not for me, but concerned about how can we fund core development. You know, core is big now. It's a big amount of code to review. It takes time to get patches in, and it's becoming, I'm not sure I really like the word, but it's becoming more professional in terms of the amount of time that it takes to work on stuff, I guess. And it's complex and it's hard, and so it requires a level of commitment. And I, you know, after Denver, as I said, I came back and I said I was going to work on Drupal core properly, rather than just at cons. And so at the time I was working in 9 to 5 plus a bit. And then I would also just work through the night on Drupal core, because that's what I wanted to do. That's what, you know, I was interested in doing. So I was probably working crazy hours that I don't even want to think. And my partner, found it interesting.
That's an interesting way of putting it. Perhaps less than ideal.
It's less than ideal. I mean, it's hard because, of course, on one level, you know, people get extremely passionate about Drupal and open source, and so you are committed to doing stuff, and it's enjoyable. There's a buzz to working with all these amazing people, and you're learning so much that, you know, that can drive you on, and that certainly did drive me on for the kind of, was it, I don't know, 8-9 months that I did that for. It does get tiring.
Yeah.
I would say that. Once my son arrived, I was like, yeah, okay, now I've got like three priorities. I've got three things that I'm basically doing with my life. There's some old adage that says when you have three things, choose two. And that's, you know, basically what I did. And now I'm trying to work out how to make it sustainable. Dream world, yeah, I would be able to be community funded by things like GitTip and work on Drupal 8 full time. However, I don't, you know, I'm pretty realistic around this. I'm not sure that that's going to work out. I have a mortgage.
Yeah.
I have a son. I have a partner. These people and myself need feeding. So at some point, I will look to other ways, whether that's like approaching companies directly and say, hey, do you want to sponsor me? You know, kind of the checks solution, I guess. Like, you know, he's sponsored by TenGen to make sure that Drupal 8 will be the most Mongo friendly release of Drupal ever. Or will I look to maybe inspire a company to do the Acquia thing? I'm not quite sure how much people know, but Acquia has the Office of the CTO, which is a group of people which are employed basically to do Dries's will around Drupal, and they are, you know, they do an awful lot of work on Drupal 8, and it would be really great if we could have more companies step up and do the Acquia thing, but it's expensive, you know. So yeah. You know, it's a big thing to choose to do that for a company. And then there's other, you know, opportunities. Maybe I'm thinking outside the box and that is the Drupal community. There are other big companies around that look at Drupal and think, hey, wouldn't that be great if that ran on our hardware, you know,
right.
Well, and our like kind of open services. So, you know, for example, maybe Google would think about sponsoring someone to work on Drupal and make sure that it works on their app engine or something like that. Right. So I'm thinking about, you know, those kind of things for myself. But I'd really like if I could try and influence the community to have a big think about this, because, you know, for the kind of play for a core committer is quite obvious. It's really easy to track, you know, how much time I spend and what I do, but I'm kind of at the end of the chain. It's also important that we start to think about how do we fund the whole of core development? How do we fund, CMI in the future? You know, Greg has written a lot on how he had to go around companies and ask them for money and how much time that took from him to manage that whole relationship. And do we really want our system architects and developers like managing money and managing tax stuff, or should we be thinking bigger as a community? Should we be thinking, hey, how can we take this away from them? How can we give them the investment that they need, but free them up to work on core full time? And so, you know, hopefully maybe my situation can inspire us to have that conversation.
Yeah, I talked to Greg. I mean, he's a Lullabot, but Greg and I have been friends for a long time, and I had him on the podcast a while ago to talk about his funding efforts around CMI, and he was successful in that he got his time funded, but it was a lot of work just for him to get funding to be able to do the real work that he wanted to do, which was CMI.
Yeah.
And like you said, all of that overhead is, I mean, when you're talking about people who just, you know, want to work on the software and make it better, that's, gosh, I don't know if you've ever had to do fundraising or money management. Most people don't find it enjoyable, and it's, and it does take a lot of time and energy. I'm curious, and I would love, you know, I mean, people who are listening to this podcast, if you have ideas and thoughts on this, like, we, I think as a community, we do need to figure it out, but I don't even know how to begin figuring it out other than, you know, having the conversation, everybody sitting around and nodding their heads going, yeah, we should do something about that, you know, but it's like, what do you do about that?
The community is starting to think about these things, you know, quite hard. It's not just the stuff that Acquia is doing, but, you know, recently, I think it was like last couple of weeks, there was the DrupalFund.us site was launched by a European company. I can't quite remember their name, which is all about trying to get ways for people to propose like projects that need funding in the Drupal community and have people do the whole micro donations thing. So GitTip. You know, the reason that I'm on GitTip is I was sitting there in Drupal Contribute, and people were like, saying, "Oh, people should sponsor do something with this on GitTip." And I was like, "Hey, I should do that." And so then I was like, "Okay, I'll do it." And then I was like, I created an account on GitTip, and I was like, "Oh God, now I've got to ask people for money." And there's that kind of, "Oh, that feels horrible." And it's not, you know, it's not a natural thing to say, "Hey, pay me."
Right. I find that an extremely uncomfortable place to be in myself.
It's an interesting feeling, but now I've done it. It's like, hey, actually, this is okay, because what I'm saying to people is, you know, I need some funding. I'm going to try this first. I'm trying the community first because I think it would be really great if the community could see the community knows how valuable Drupal Core is because it uses it, it's choosing to use it. But it'd be really great if we could come up with some way that we could change that kind of karma that Drupal Core has into real dollars that not only pays for like a committer, but actually could start to pay for development. Because in that way, we can start to make, you know, ensure that Drupal's future is funded by the people who really care about it. And I think that kind of sense of ownership is important. I mean, if you look at, you know, taking an analogy off to European football, you know, the Premiership is pretty much all owned by foreigners and by really big individuals or big companies. But in Germany, for example, they mandate that the football clubs have to be owned by 50% plus one of the actual fans. And I think that if you look at football, I think like German football matches are a more fun place to go because of that, because the community is involved. And I think it's important that we somehow encourage the community to think about this issue, because, you know, do we want Drupal to be only invested in by really large enterprises or by the really big Drupal companies? You know, I think not. I think it's important that the smaller companies, the smaller single contributors, the hobbyists are a part of core.
Yeah, I mean, it's always a big concern, right? Like, this has been like one of those classic things that people talk about around Acquia, you know, I mean, that's, they are, you know, like one of the only companies within Drupal shops that basically fund full-time people to work on Drupal, but which is great, because it is expensive. It's a lot of money, and they've devoted themselves to that. But on the flip side of that, then people are like, yeah, but now Acquia basically owns Drupal Core, you know, and people are afraid, well, you know, whatever Acquia wants is what's going to happen and not what I want in my little two-man shop or something, you know, and this is that balance of I agree with you. Like, I think we need, the support needs to come from a much broader base than just a couple of really large companies. Not that there's anything wrong with large companies providing funding.
It's, it's about fundraising, right? So yeah. so if you look at some of the biggest Drupal users are the NGOs like Oxfam, Greenpeace, Concern Worldwide in Ireland, who I used to actually work for. So I know a little bit about fundraising. And one of the interesting things is that they don't just appeal to one segment when they fundraise. You know, they don't just fundraise with. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't just say, "Okay, I'm going to provide aid in the Sudan. I'm going to appeal only to international governments because they're going to give me the big bucks." They also have programs around, you know, individual givers, the single people on the street that they approach. They have mailing campaigns. They have campaigns which address small businesses. You know, they have campaigns that address large donors too, and we should be the same. Drupal should think kind of pluralistically about how do we solve this problem. You know, it's great that Acquia stepped up and is doing this. It's not a bad thing, but in the challenge that they give to the community and to other companies, it's like, well, hey, how do we replicate this? And you know, everyone goes, oh, hey, we can't do an Octo team. Well, no, but at the same time, there are other ways. There are other things that need funding. There are other mm-hmm. ways of giving your staff time to work on core and actually respecting that time.
Well, there's the rub.
there is the rub. I'm not saying it's easy, but there are ways. I mean, actually, since I left Capgemini, I know for a fact that they've instigated like a half day every Friday for hacking on whatever the person wants, and that's great. You know, that even big enterprises like Capgemini are able to see, hey, if we want to attract the best developers, then we should be doing stuff like that. Because working on core isn't just about giving; you also get an awful lot. You know, I'm a much better developer because I work on core. I'm probably even a better person because you know you get to interact with so many interesting characters who you know you just learn from them. You see how people behave. You see how to solve really difficult issues. You know, like working with Alex Bronstein in Portland and watching the way that he was able to take a really difficult issue and like, put it up on a board and get consensus around things that even he wasn't like fully understanding what he was saying. It was like, wow, hey, that's how you do it. And now I'm better at doing that. And so I think that, you know, core is a great opportunity for people. It's not just, hey, give us some money, you're going to get nothing. It's actually join in. Because everyone benefits. Core will benefit, and you will too.
So, kind of in a related vein, but taking it forward a little further, let's say that you managed to get funding to work on Drupal Core full time. Mm-hmm. Do you want to just keep doing that? Like, would you be cool with that? Or like, because I know some people who work on Drupal Core get a little burnt out, shall we say, and just sort of like, okay, I did my time, I poured my heart into this, and I need a break from Drupal Core, and I just want to go work for somebody and have them, you know, and just work on projects again and not deal with Core. How are you on that scale of things right now?
I don't think, on one level, I don't think it changes that you need a holiday just to work on Core. I think like the kind of the holiday trap is there for all self-employed people, and obviously I'm the extreme version of self-employed because I'm also paying myself kind of at the moment, and I have no income, $7.25 a week, but you still need holidays and you still need to make sure that you're having some balance, and that can be tricky to achieve, but. You know, fortunately, I have a new son and a partner who do make sure that I do take breaks and do take holidays and stuff like that. So I'm not saying I'm perfect at it, and it doesn't cause the occasional fun.
Well, like any job, right? There's ups and downs, exactly. And frustrations, exactly. And excitement, and you know, it's
to an extent. Exactly. There's some part of working on core that is just the same as any job. You pour your time and effort into it. You have pride, and then some days you're like, "Oh wow, this just sucks." But it's very rare because one of the things about working on core is that the community, that the people that you work with, are so great. And for me, you know, that really helps me be motivated. That motivates me a lot. And the other thing is just like this whole idea that, hey, you know, you're contributing to code that can end up anywhere and do the most incredible things, you know, from the big, huge, obvious things like the White House using Drupal and contributing back a whole petitioning platform to the Drupal community, to small little, you know, NGOs around the world who I have no idea what they're doing, but they're doing amazing work because that's what people do, and people build amazing things with Drupal, and it's like, hey, I'm part of that, and that's a big thing.
Yeah, I think that's for me that's always like sort of those like goosebump moments sometimes when I stop and just think about what's going on, and it's like, no, I'm part of something way bigger than me or, you know, my job and getting up in the morning and going to work, you know. So that's pretty awesome.
Yep.
Well, we should probably wrap things up. Do you have any last thoughts for people who aspire to work on core?
Yeah, okay. A couple of things. One event that wasn't mentioned in the lead up is the Midwest Developer Summit in Chicago, the 15th to 17th of August. I think there's still spots to attend that. That's going to be really focused discussions on Drupal 8, but there will be stuff for novices to do as well. So if you're new to Drupal 8 and you're local to Chicago, or can get there, it'll be good. I'm going. That's one of the nice things about the Drupal community is that even though obviously I don't have like an unlimited stack of funds, people are quite willing to sponsor me to go things. So the Drupal Camp New York people sponsor me to go over there, people sponsor me to go to Prague, and people sponsor me to go to Chicago. So nice. I can get to all these meetings, which is fantastic. And also just one thing for Prague. You mentioned that there's going to be a sprint at Prague, but also around most of the conferences, the cons now, we have something called the extended sprints, which we're just organizing right now. And so the weekend before and after Prague, there will be sprints. So I'm sure that we can include the links for those things well.
And I should also point out the around Prague, things like the extended sprints and you know, just the sprint day on the Friday and stuff like that, you don't have to have a ticket for the conference to do those things. So if you just want to like go to Prague and hang out for a week with a bunch of Drupal people without necessarily having to pay to attend sessions and stuff like that, you can spend the whole week sprinting with people and hanging out and sharing ideas and beers with people in the Drupal community without necessarily having to attend the conference, if that's a thing, or if you just want to show up the weekend before and sprint with people and then you have to go home and go back to work, that's cool. So yeah. I mean, obviously for folks in, say, you know, other places in the world other than Europe, that's a little bit of a trek and an expense, but for folks who are in Europe, you can find people that you might be able to crash with and you know, get an inexpensive flight or train and just go and hack with people for a couple of days. So
yeah, and Prague will be fantastic. We'll have a lot of fun in Prague.
Yeah, I am.
It's a great city.
So looking forward. I've never been to Prague, so I'm so excited.
Well, yeah. Addy, we have to make sure we go to a cocktail bar. One of the best I know is there. So
sweet.
And I know how you like your cocktails.
Yes, I do. Yes, for those listeners who don't know, I am a cocktail lover. So, cool. Ah, I'm excited. It's a date, my friend.
All right. Awesome.
Cool. All right. Well, we should probably wrap up, let people go back to their jogging or mowing the lawn or whatever it is that they need to do. But thank you so much for coming on the podcast. And as always, such a pleasure to just sit down and chat with you. So I look forward to getting some time in Prague.
Thanks, Addy. That was great.
Awesome. See you, everybody. Till next time.